First, there's a lot of frustration with our democracy today. Many people say they don't feel like their voice matters, that politicians don't have a reason to listen to their opinion. Others are simply sick and tired of angry partisanship of the past few election cycles. But our next guest has spent years working with an idea that could offer some relief: deliberative democracy. Put into practice all around the world, it brings people together to learn about and discuss political issues and then offer their opinions. James Fishkin is a professor of political science and communication at Stanford University. He directs the Center for Deliberative Democracy. He's the author of the new book, Democracy When the People Are Thinking: Revitalizing Our Politics Through Public Deliberation. James, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, spell out for us what we mean by deliberative democracy.
Well, the root idea of deliberation is weighing the competing arguments and reasons, particularly if you have good information about them. Most of the time, most people around the world in most countries are not focused on the complexities of policy issues. They are, to use the phrase of some social scientists, quote, rationally ignorant, unquote. That is, if I have a lot of, if I have only one vote in millions and only one voice in millions or hundreds of thousands, why should I spend a lot of time thinking about these complicated issues, particularly when people are trying to manipulate my opinion, misinform me, or just not interested in listening? And if I do talk about politics or policy, I may get into an argument that's unpleasant. So many people tune out or they don't invest much time in thinking about it. My colleagues in political science have generally come to the conclusion that that means the public is stupid. No, the public's not stupid. It's just they don't think they're not effectively motivated to really think through the issues. So my question is, what would the people think under conditions where they thought their voice mattered and where they could get good information and where they could be assured of a civil, mutually respectful conversation? So we have a method for realizing deliberative democracy in practice. I call it deliberative polling. We've done it 109 times in 28 countries, in many cases with consequential results that have affected policies and that have brought people from very different perspectives together. So it's a very simple idea, but it works, and it's worth trying in an age of great polarization, disaffection, and where actually democracy itself is in crisis because it's in disrepute in the sense that the approval ratings for politicians are in the same area as for, I don't want to insult undertakers and used car salesmen, but they're roughly in that area. And this is not just in the United States. It's all over the world. So I think we need to think about reform, not replacing, but we need to think about targeted reforms and entry points where it's practical and safe to bring the people's views to bear.
Let's talk about this method now that you've talked about in theory and you've used it in practice from California to Mongolia. What is deliberative polling?
It's very simple. An ordinary poll just offers the public's reflection of sound bites and headlines because the public hasn't thought very much about the issues. The good thing about polling when done well is you get a good scientific sample so you can represent the opinions, and that's different from self-selected mobilization, which is just going to get the people who feel really strongly. So we begin with good polling. Actually, we begin with preparations on an issue where we have an advisory group representing different points of view, and we prepare materials that have arguments for and against different policy options that are going to be the subject of the poll. We vet those so that they're lucid, readable, and accurate. Sometimes we also have a video version in case some people are not so literate to make the same information accessible. Then what we do is we take a good survey about those policy options and the reasons why people might support or oppose an option. Then what we do, so that's ordinary polling, but then we build on top of that. We actually recruit the people to come to a single place, well, either face-to-face or sometimes it's online with video small group discussions like Google Hangouts or other software, but usually face-to-face 300, 400, 500, 600, 700 people, a good sample of the population, divided into small groups, randomly divided so they're diverse, with trained moderators who don't offer any opinion but just facilitate a mutually respectful discussion. And the discussion is of the policy options, the pros and cons, and then they come up with questions that they direct to panels of competing experts and politicians who offer competing answers to the questions, only to the questions of the people. And then we alternate. Let's say it's a whole weekend, and we alternate an hour and a half small group, an hour and a half plenary, another hour and a half small group, another hour and a half plenary, until we work through the whole agenda and the people have really not only had a dialogue with the experts and politicians, but with each other. And they've learned to listen to each other, even though people from different points of view normally now in this polarized world don't talk to each other at all. And they don't consult websites that will give them the other point of view. Well, here they actually listen and talk. And then they take the same at the end of the weekend. I'm saying it's a weekend for because that's the usual format. At the end of the weekend, they take the same survey that they did on First Contact, and we see the changes of opinion. And maybe two-thirds of the time, the opinions change significantly, sometimes very dramatically. Those final opinions are the considered judgments of the people of a representative and informed sample. So we put all of America or all of California or, as you mentioned, Mongolia. I'm just back from Mongolia, all of Mongolia in one room, or even all of the European Union, 27 countries at the time, now 28, maybe going back to 27. But the whole population in one room where it can think together, reason together, and listen to each other, and then decide what they really think in individual confidential questionnaires like secret ballots. So, that, in other words, that's what the people would think if they were thinking. And it's usually pretty smart. It may not be what I think or what any individual thinks, but they usually have good reasons for the conclusions that they come to.
Talking to James Fishkin, author of the new book, Democracy, When the People Are Thinking, Revitalizing Our Politics Through Public Deliberation. And James, let's talk about that different kind of solutions. When we have a choice in a poll, in election, usually the range of options has been narrowed down to, you know, two or three by political parties, by politicians, by experts, things like that. Do you see different solutions, different trade-offs made when people deliberate like this?
Well, yes. Well, usually, look, if there's a referendum, it's just yes or no. Parties have programs, and usually if they have coherent positions, they're packages of policies put together. And so you can just vote for one package or another. But in the deliberative poll, we can disaggregate. We can separate out all the options and probe each of them individually. So if you look at a particular party, you might like something and dislike two or three other things, and then you have to decide how much you care about the thing you like. Well, no, we'll poll on each individual item, and with the arguments for and against each individual item, we can get a quite nuanced picture of what the people really want, and separate out the packages and get policymakers to think about what they really should do. And it becomes what I call a route to responsible advocacy. This is what the people wanted, and here's why. And if you, as the policymaker, are actually interested in listening to the people, you here are the reasons that you can cite that really weighed heavily with the sample after we put the whole population of the whole country in one room to think about it.
All right, so you've got this group of people, this representative sample of a state, a country, a European Union, whatever. They've come out with their recommendations on whatever the issue might be. And practically, in your experience, then what? Do their reports go in a file cabinet, or do they actually lead to policy changes?
Well, I'll tell you a few cases going way back and some very recent where the results were very consequential. So years ago in Texas, a Public Utility Commission, we worked with them and the eight then regulated utilities about how Texas was going to get its energy for electricity, coal, natural gas, wind power, conservation, piping in the stuff from Mexico, those were the main options, although sometimes the nuclear came up at a later point and an earlier point. Well, so to everyone's surprise, the percentage in the eight projects, the public's willingness to pay more on its monthly bill to support wind power, even if it was just slightly more, went from 50% to 85%. And so the Public Utility Commission and the legislature instituted a series of changes over the years that led Texas from being last among the 50 states, number 50, to being number one in wind power by 2007, surpassing California. And so that was implemented and has been good for the state to have all that wind power. It keeps growing and growing. A couple of months ago, South Korea, where we had done some earlier projects, faced this big choice when the new government came in. The new government was anti-nuclear, but they had these two nuclear reactors, Shingori 5 and 6, that were partially constructed already and were expected online, and we're going to keep the cost of electricity low and allow them to avoid investing in a lot of fossil fuels. And so there were clear arguments on either side, but the government had committed itself to getting rid of nuclear power. And so they decided, to my amazement, they said, we're going to let the people decide. And they sponsored quite rigorously a national deliberative poll. And the people moved decisively, 59% supporting the continuation of the construction of the two nuclear reactors, for the reasons that I just alluded to, and that's what the government accepted. In other words, there was a hard choice, and they said, let the people decide, so the people did.
We're talking to James Fishkin. His new book is called Democracy When the People Are Thinking. Talk about the idea of deliberative polling, getting people together, representative groups of people together to learn about and discuss an issue and see where they stand. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for James about how this works in practice? Is this an idea that you think could improve our political discussions? Is there an issue you'd want to try this on in your local community, in your state? Do you have concerns about how this might work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with James Fishkin. His new book is called Democracy When the People Are Thinking, Revitalizing Our Politics Through Public Deliberation. Talking about deliberative democracy, deliberative polling. These are events that put people together to learn about and discuss political issues and come to decisions. And the decisions may not be what they thought they would be coming in. Call 800-642-1234 to join the conversation. Do you have questions about how this works? Do you think this sounds like a way that we could break through some of the polarization, the partisanship, and the feeling that people's voices aren't heard in politics? Would you want to try this in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to a caller now. Stan is with us in Green Bay. Hello, Stan.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I love the idea. I have no problem with direct democracy with one major caveat, and that is that the money spent on both sides would have to be roughly equal. So if I'm a nuclear argument, for instance, if one side can spend $100 million and the other side can only spend $100,000, well, obviously you're going to get tons of science pro and none against. So as long as the money is roughly equal and there's no dark money, and I would have no problem with direct democracy.
Stan, thanks for the call. And James, this isn't exactly direct democracy. This isn't everybody in the state or country votes on an issue. That said, Stan's concerns about one side or the other having more influence, being able to put their finger on the scale in these deliberative events. Is that a concern?
Well, it's not a concern for the deliberative events. It is a concern for direct democracy, because with direct democracy, there's a tremendous amount of money required even to set the agenda, that is, to for the signature collection. In California, it runs about $3 million or so to get the even to get something on the ballot. And then that just gets you on the ballot, and then you've got all the problem of the television advertising to support a proposition or oppose it. And that's been pretty dark money. So, in fact, We did. The deliberative poll, by contrast, is a scientific sample of the people. So the people in microcosm deliberate, and they represent everybody, and there's a fair playing field for considering the arguments. So in California, we did a statewide deliberative poll, and one of the issues was reform of the initiative system. And some of the reforms that came out that rated really at the top at the end actually got implemented. There were So the situation had been before our project that it, once you devise an initiative and you collect the signatures, it's sort of like a contract that you can't change anything about the initiative, even if people figure out that there's some big problem. So we had considered various ways in which people, in which the proponents of the initiative could modify the and improve the reform after public consultation. Secondly, the big problem was nobody knew who was spending the money in favor and against. It was very hard to figure out. Technically, the stuff was filed eventually, but it was not transparent and available. So there was the legislature listened to these problems and actually passed a law that made some changes for greater transparency about the top funders in favor and against, and for allowing a process where the problems in an initiative, once it had been once it had gotten enough signatures of the rest, once it had qualified, could be modified or improved in collaboration with the proponent, the people who put the initiative on. So we actually improved the initiative system and helped. We helped. We were among the coalition of many good groups that helped improve the initiative system in California. But direct democracy is a very flawed process. As you can see from the Brexit referendum, or at least as far as I can tell, everybody agrees that the public in Britain did not have good information on either side and has now gotten itself into a big mess. So the Brexit referendum is an example of the problem of direct democracy. This is not direct democracy. It's as I say, democracy with a representative sample that deliberates on behalf of the people, but that represents everybody.
Thanks for that call, Stan. We'll go next to Felicia in Milwaukee. Felicia, hi.
Hi. You mentioned that you seek out experts so that you can present information from all sides of an issue. I'm just wondering, how do you go about choosing those experts? Because one issue that I really care about and has affected me personally, which is vaccines, like I never hear anybody presenting information from the experts that I follow in the vaccine issue, and that includes people like Dr. Martin Paul, Dr. Zimmerman from Johns Hopkins University, people like C.C. Doucette that's gotten the 9 bills in the Massachusetts legislature.
Felicia, thanks for the call. So, James, how do you pick the experts so that everybody on all sides is happy about them?
Well, you get an advisory group on the issue that does represent competing sides on the issue, and they approve a range of experts. A range of experts who speak, who answer questions, but represent the perspective in favor or against a policy proposal. So, if a deliberative poll were held on a given issue, then you'd want you'd want the advisory group to consult the prominent experts on either side, and you'd want to make sure that there was coverage on both sides.
We've got an email from Jessica. Jessica says, how can I incorporate these skills concerning deliberative democracy in my high school classroom? So any suggestions, James, for a high school teacher to teach students how to do this?
Well, if you go to the Center for Deliberative Democracy website, which is cdd.stanford.edu, you'll find a high school toolkit. We have worked out ways of doing this in the classroom, and it's been very useful. And in the classroom. And if you correspond with the center, I have a staff member who will assist you.
All right. Good luck, Jessica. In our last minute and a half or so, James, what do people say about this process after they come out of it, the everyday citizens who take part?
They love it. They say, when can I be selected again? What can I do? And we find that it's transformative. When we did the very first one, in which was in the United Kingdom, we went back. We saw that not only did the people become more informed, but we went back a year later, and we found out that they were even more informed than at the end of the weekend. In other words, we had sort of activated them as citizens. And we've done that. We found that in a number of countries. So once people realize, once people get involved because they think their voice matters, they find other ways to make their voice matter. So it activates civic engagement.
It's a good place to leave it. James, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to James Fishkin. He's a professor of political science and communication at Stanford University. He directs the Center for Deliberative Democracy. He's been talking to us about the ideas in his new book. It's called Democracy When the People Are Thinking, Revitalizing Our Politics Through Public Deliberation. Well, there's still time for you to publicly deliberate on this idea and what you think of it. We'd love to hear more from you. Is there an issue you'd like to try this on, statewide, nationwide, or maybe at the local level? Is there something that you think this process, bringing community members together to talk about an issue, getting information from different sides of the issue, and then coming up with your own solutions, is this something you think could help fix whatever issue is on your mind? You can tweet us at Central Time WPR, message us on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or send us an email. That's ideas@WPR.org. Again, ideas@WPR.org. Interested in hearing what you think?